Begin transmission.
Guten Tag, meine Kinder. Ich bin Tobe the Wolpertinger. I'm your host for this German language version of the Dubious Goals Committee intended to be broadcast on Deutsche Welle. I doubt they're going to pick me up, so you might be listening to this on Anon Radio. I got some mail today. I just walked into my house, checked my mail, and what do I have? I found a catalog. And guess who the catalog is from? That's right, Dixie Gunworks. As you may or may not know, I am in fact an American, which means that I am a gun nut. I'm just crazy for guns, just like all Americans, and our guns. Oh, we love our guns because the piece of paper that we founded our country on says right on it that we can have all the guns we want, and so we do. The difference between me and your typical American gun nut is that my favorite guns are black powder guns. That's right. If you have a gun and it takes cased ammunition, I have no interest in that. Me, I'm a fan of black powder, lead balls, and mattress ticking for wadding. Kaboom, kaboom! Makes a lot of smoke. If you don't know what I'm talking about, for some reason or another, if you don't know anything about guns, basically you have the kind of guns that we have today, modern army death guns, and then you have your basic cowboy gun, and if you go back a little bit further than that, you got Civil War guns, and if you go back further than that, you have American Revolutionary War guns, the kind that we rebelled against England with. And if you still can't picture this in your head, think pirate gun. Anyway, Dixie Gunworks, they sell a lot of black powder firearms, accessories, and accoutrements to either crazy people like me or Civil War reenactors. If there was Revolutionary War reenactors, I'd probably join those nuts. But being as I don't have any of those guys around here, I'm just sitting here looking at a catalog. So, we got the catalog here. Oh yeah, and it's printed on newsprint, and it's tabloid size, and it's 32 pages. Let's flip it open here. Oh, the first thing we got here is the Tinder lighter. Yeah, this is a real neat reproduction of a Henry Nock Tinder lighter, which is basically like a flintlock gun, except it doesn't shoot a bullet. It just makes fire. So it's basically your 18th century lighter. You know, before lighters were invented. So it kind of looks like a gun where it's got a trigger and it has an arm with a flint in it, and you pull the trigger and the flint flies forward, hits the frizzin, ignites the powder, and now you have fire. And you can light your candles or your fireplace or your stove, whatever you have in place of electricity, because we hadn't invented electricity yet. All right, turn the page. What do we got? Oh dear, oh dear. On the next page, there's a lot of the typical stuff. Just Scottish Highlanders, pistols, a flintlock, some caplock, dragoon pistol, carbines type things, big howdah hunter. Oh, and here's a cute little Philadelphia Derringer. I've seen it, seen it. Ooh, here's the one that I want. It's not on sale, though. This little vest pocket Derringer they've had for a while. It's $175. It's actually kind of a new product. And I really want it, but I'm not going to buy it unless I can get it a little bit cheaper than that. Although that's not a bad price in all actuality. But the real interesting thing on this page is the powder tester. Oh, and I really, really want it. But, you know, what do I need it for? I can test powder at home. I don't need to buy this little thing, but I do. It's a percussion cap lock thing. It's like, it looks like a teeny tiny gun, but the barrel is only about a half an inch, approximately 1 centimeter, long. And what you do is you put powder in it, you put a cap on it, and then you fold this funky spring-loaded thing up against the face of the barrel. And so when you pull the trigger and go bang, this thing swings out and it's spring-loaded and it tells you how strong your powder is, if you're the kind of person that likes to make black powder. And if you don't know how to make black powder, it's very simple. There's only 3 ingredients that you can buy anywhere: sulfur, charcoal, and potassium nitrate. I'm not going to tell you the ratio in which to mix them, because that could have serious repercussions upon me. And that's just not anything you need to know. But look at this. Here's an 1851 Navy pepper box. Wow. Imagine a Navy revolver except with a pepper box cylinder. Oh, that's pretty cool, but what am I ever going to do with it? Oh, and here we go. On the next page here, from the Italian company Paeta. I like this company. I own a couple of their things. Lots of reproduction Colt Navies. Here's an 1851 Navy. Here's an 1861 Navy. Here's a cavalry model. Ooh, here's the pocket Remingtons. Neato. Ooh, the new model Navy. All kinds of pistols that are basically cowboy guns. These are kind of out of my time frame of interest, but I still like to look at them. Because they're black powder. Aha, what do we have on this page here? Ooh, we've got the Peter Sully Kentucky Pistol Kit. Yeah, this is my kind of thing. This is a cap lock pistol that kind of looks like a pirate gun. It's 50 caliber, it takes a lot of powder, it goes boom. Ooh, gotta have one. And I can get a kit, a 50 caliber percussion cap kit for $350 on sale. Not bad. And here's another, what's this? It's listed the same though. Pistol percussion kit, 50 caliber, $275. Well, what's the difference? I'll figure it out later. And right below it are the Peter Sully Ryder Derringers, and now you can get a case for them. I've already got something cooler than that, and I'm tempted to buy them, but I'm not going to. Okay, on the next page, we have long guns. Now, see, these are period correct for me. Oh, we got a Brown Bess over here, which is a flintlock. And we got a Cub rifle. Ooh, a Charleville musket. Wow. Now, this is pretty cool. For only about $1,200, you can get a reproduction Italian Model 1717 musket. Ooh, flintlock. And it's a big mother. It takes a it takes a 69 caliber ball. Oh my god. That's a thumper. There's an Indian trade musket. That's kind of cool too. And let's see, we got some shotguns, Hawkins, two different Hawkins, an Old English shotgun. And all kinds of other fun stuff. You know what they don't have? They don't have any underhammer stuff. And I'd like to have me a little black powder underhammer plinker. Something that I can just shoot a single, like, triple-aught buckshot out of. That would be fun. Guns are fun. Only because black powder is fun. And there's all kinds of other stuff. If you're a Civil War reenactor, this is where you get all your stuff. Ooh, here's a Trapper pistol kit for only $270. Cool. And ooh, what's this? Oh, this is the same thing. Here's a 50 caliber pistol octagonal barrel. Cool, by Lyman. 50 caliber, $295. Strangely enough, the larger caliber, the 54 caliber, is only $265. Go figure. And these are kits that, if you know a little bit of gunsmithing, meaning woodworking, you can put them together. Because, let's face it, gunsmithing in the 18th century was basically just woodworking. And here's some books about old guns, and I'm not interested. And on the back is a giant order form. So, let's set that aside, and maybe I'll figure out a way to get a whole bunch of money so I can buy some more toys that go bang. I think I fell in love with black powder weapons by the time my parents took me and my little brother to Colonial Williamsburg. My dad, the emeritus, is a chemistry professor, or was. He is in fact retired. And so he often had to travel in the summers to give papers and lectures at various institutions and stuff and conferences all over the place. And so as a child, that was our excuse for a family vacation. My dad has to go deliver a paper somewhere to some learned academy. And so we'd all jump in the car, travel halfway across the United States, and make a family vacation out of it. And so at some point in time, my dad had to do something somewhere in that vicinity. And so we stopped by Colonial Williamsburg, and to me, that was about the coolest thing I've ever seen in my life. Between all the black powder guns and the gingerbread cookies, oh, I crave those cookies to this day. I must have gone there when I was 10 years old or slightly younger. And now, even today, in the 21st century, today, in 2015, I can still taste those incredible gingerbread cookies, and I've never been able to get anything like it ever since. Ugh. So now I gotta go back to Williamsburg just to buy... I have the worst cookie problems. I don't even want to talk about it. So there we are, in Colonial Williamsburg, learning all about colonial things, and... Oh, I came out of that with a... with a toy musket, a toy powder horn, and a tricorn hat. Oh boy. And that's how I became an American Revolutionary War fan, or as it's sometimes called in other places, the American War of Independence. Strangely enough, I had already known by that time, by the time I was 10 years old and actually at Colonial Williamsburg, I already knew how to make gunpowder, and I had already done so. When you have a dad that's a chemistry professor at a university, it doesn't take much to convince them that you need your own laboratory in the basement of your house. And so I'm probably the only 8-year-old in the entire world who had a fully functioning chemistry laboratory in the basement of his house. And yeah, I actually learned how to make gunpowder by watching Star Trek, the original series. You know the episode I'm talking about. It's in which the one in which Captain Kirk has to fight the Gorn, and he makes a crude cannon out of a piece of bamboo, some diamonds, and a bunch of chemicals. Well, the first time I ever watched that, when I was probably 7 or 6 years old, I doubt I was even in first grade, my dad knew what was going on. And he said, oh, he needs to make gunpowder. He's going to make gunpowder. I'm like, wait, what? You can make gunpowder out of dirt? Wait, what? And that's when my dad said, oh, it's easy. Here's how you make gunpowder. Sulfur, carbon, and potassium nitrate. You could add a little strontium nitrate to your mixture. It'll give it a nice little red color. I use a lot of strontium nitrate in fireworks manufacture. It's a color donor. It's how you get a nice red. So whenever you're watching fireworks and you see the color red, you can say, oh, strontium nitrate, and impress your friends with your chemistry knowledge. It wasn't until years later that I learned how to make Armstrong's compound, or Armstrong's mixture, which is a a very, very explosive mixture. It's a very percussive. It detonates just by friction. You don't want to hit it too hard. It will go, and it will go boom. You're probably familiar with this if you've ever had any of those little snappers or snaps or poppets. They go by many little names. What they are is a little firework that looks like a wadded up and twisted piece of tissue paper. And sometimes they call them party poppers. And you throw them onto a hard surface and they go snap. Yeah, those things. There's no gunpowder in there. What's in that little twist of tissue is Armstrong's compound and some rocks. Some sand to create the friction to make that stuff go off. It's fun, but it's dangerous in any quantity. That's for damn sure. Speaking of dangerous in any quantity, my God, man, maybe you should listen to this.
Joink! The accelerated aging of John Terry, example 2, Star Trek, the deadly years. Roger Courtois would have saved that.
sleeps on the shake and she steals a night kiss. Babies are belly dance, mirage romance in Casablanca. Frankincense in the dressless of her hair. They ride the night on a white mare. Her perfume drifts on the Arabian air from the heart of the harem. He carries her off down to Pongri's oasis.
I hate you all so much.
No one cares, Figgis. You're only invited to round out the numbers.
Joink!
Terry and Cahill, less defending, more flinching. I take no pleasure in this.
The accelerated aging of John Terry examples recall to I would have saved that.
You are listening to the daily meeting of the Dubious Goals Committee. right here on Anon Radio. My name is Tobe. I'm your host. I'm the president of the committee. And we've come to that very special part of the show in which I take a bath. So I'm up here in my bathroom, in my upstairs bathroom. Perhaps you can tell just by the sound of the natural reverb. And I'm going to put this down real quick. It's time for me to take a bath because my back is killing me. So we'll turn on the hot water. We'll turn on the cold water. And we'll let that start to fill. Now the big question is, how long is it going to take before my cat comes up here and opens the door and has to be in the bathroom with me? Because as soon as Pippa hears the water being turned on, she has to run upstairs and see what's going on. She hates baths, but she likes to watch other people take baths. Go figure. So if you hear the door open while I'm talking, you'll hear it go click. You'll know that my cat has, in fact, entered the bathroom and is thinking about sitting on the side of the bathtub. Yeah, she likes to sit here as I take a bath. She sits on the side of the tub, and she sticks her tail in the water. For a cat that doesn't like water, she sure puts her tail in the water a lot. Maybe it's because she's unsmart. Or maybe she's not as afraid of water as she'd like us all to think. All right, this is full enough. Oh, let's get into the bathtub here. Oh yeah. Ugh. Ooh. Ow, my knee. Oh yes, this is much better. There we go. I don't know if I mentioned it, but I had to adjust my hot water heater the other day. I personally felt like the water wasn't hot enough, and so I went down into the basement, and I cranked that sucker up. And yeah, you can see steam coming out the hot water right now. I can't help but feel vaguely buoyant right now. I feel like I'm floating. Ugh. There, I have managed to lean back at an angle that doesn't send excruciating pain down my legs. Alright, where are we at here, water-wise? Make a few more temperature adjustments. Turn some of the cold water down, let the hot water do its work. There we go. It is time for your Tobster to vasodilate. And if you don't know what that word means, I would just like to take this time to remind you that I do not sell dictionaries for a living. And you know how to use Google. We're just about at maximum water capacity here, so I'm going to start turning the hot water down with my toes, because I'm toes ambidextrous. That's like being ambidextrous, except with your toes. And that's not a real word. So don't even bother looking that one up. Ooh. Okay, here I am, sitting in my bathtub, listening to the water drip, and wondering where my cat is. Jeez, I've been sitting in the bathtub now for 3 minutes, and my cat still hasn't shown up. Which really only probably means one of two things. She's either sleeping downstairs in a clothes basket, which is why she reeks of fabric softener all the time, or she's sleeping in the girlfriend's room and the door might be closed. No. If that were the case, I think I would be able to hear her doing alarm yangs. Yang, 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 yang. Let me out of here. I gotta take the bath. Kitties don't take baths. You know, if I had any brains at all, I would just set up a little studio in here and do my show from the bathtub every single day. Live from Tobe's Bathtub, the Dubious Goals Committee, right here on Anon Radio. That might be fun. Oh, this is actually
making my knee feel a little bit better, too. If you'll remember from a previous show, I mentioned I messed up my knee, or actually I messed up my ankle. But whatever, I really messed up some kind of connective thing between my ankle and my knee, because the day after I hurt my ankle, then my knee started hurting. I could feel the pain traveling up my ankle to under my patella. And so I iced my knee down yesterday, and I kept getting in the hot bathtub and then icing my knee, you know, just putting heat on it and then putting cold on it. And I managed to stop the swelling, and the swelling has gone down, and it doesn't hurt as much today. But I'm thinking it might be a good idea to put the ice pack back on it once I get out of the tub. You know, the most depressing part of today's bath is I forgot my boots. Where's my boots? Where's my other... Oh, and you know what really annoys me? Oh, phew, I did leave one up here. I took a couple of my motorboats and I put them downstairs. And when I say motorboats, I mean wind-up motorboats like this one. I've got three. I took two downstairs and I've got this one. Put it in the water. Yeah, he's very speedy. Oh, he ran into my knee. Here, go that way. Yep, now I got to wind him back up again. I like boats. I don't know why. You know, I mean, I live in Nebraska. And if you're not from America and you don't know where Nebraska is, it's pretty much in the middle of the United States. There's no oceans for 2,000 miles in any direction. Now I got the... Oops, it stopped. I got the motor cranked all the way over. So now my boat's just doing circles in the bathtub. Yeah, I should go get some of my other boats and have some races, but I just remembered, duh, I left the other boats downstairs. And besides, as I look at the clock here, I notice that bath time is going to go on for another couple of hours probably, or at least another 20 minutes. But this show has run out of time. What show is that? I'm talking about the Dubious Goals Committee, the best radio show ever broadcast between the hours of 1930 and 2000 hours UTC. It's on every day. I'm the host. You know that. You can catch it right here on Anon Radio. I'm going to turn the hot water back on here with my toes. There we go. And while I'm relaxing here in the nice warm tub, you're going to have to go do something else, because I'm gone. Bye-bye.
This is the end of the line for me. The end of the line, yes.
You gonna be a radio kitty?